having a chat. You said someone died. Who died?
Oh, Jesus.
It's all right, love, I said. Just someone I know. Olivia went to her. It's the middle of the night. Go to sleep. We'll all talk about it in the morning. She tried to turn Holly back towards the stairs, but Holly clung onto the door handle and dug her feet in. No! Daddy, who died?
Bed. Now. Tomorrow we can...
No, I want to know!
Sooner or later, I would have to explain. Thank God she already knew about death. Goldfish, a hamster, Sarah's granddad. I couldn't have handled that conversation on top of everything else.
Your Auntie Jackie and I have a brother, I said.
One long-lost relative at a time.
Had.
He died this morning.
Holly stared at me. Your brother? She said, with a high little shake in her voice. Like my uncle?
Yes, baby, your uncle.
Which one?
Not one of the ones you know. Those are your mammy's brothers.
This was your Uncle Kevin. You never met him, but I think you two would have liked each other.
For a second, those butane eyes went huge. Then Holly's face crumpled. Her head went back and she let out a wild shriek of pure anguish.
No! No, Mummy, no! Mummy, no!
The scream dissolved into big, gut-wrenching sobs, and she buried her face in Olivia's stomach. Olivia knelt down on the floor and wrapped her arms around Holly, murmuring soothing, wordless things. I asked, "Why is she crying?" I was genuinely perplexed. After the last few days, my mind had slowed down to a crawl. It wasn't until I saw Olivia's quick up-glance, furtive and guilty, that I realized something was going on.
Liv, I said, why is she crying?
Not now.
Shh, darling, shh, it's all right.
No, it's not all right.
The kid had a point.
Yes, now. Why the fuck is she crying?
Holly lifted her wet red face from Olivia's shoulder.
Uncle Kevin!
She screamed.
He showed me Super Mario Brothers and he was going to bring me and Auntie Jackie to the panto!
She tried to keep talking, but it got swamped by another tsunami of crying. I sat down hard on a bar stool. Olivia kept her eyes away from mine and rocked Holly back and forth, stroking her head. I could have done with someone to give me the same treatment, preferably someone with very large bosoms and a massive cloud of enveloping hair. Eventually, Holly wore herself out and moved into the shuddery gasp stage, and Liv steered her gently upstairs to bed. Her eyes were already closing. While they were up there, I found a nice bottle of Chianti in the wine rack. Olivia doesn't stock beer now that I'm gone, and cracked it open. Then I sat on the bar stool with my eyes shut, leaning my head back against the kitchen wall and listening to Olivia making soothing noises above me, and tried to work out whether I had ever been this angry before.
So, I said pleasantly, when Olivia came back downstairs.
She had taken the opportunity to put on her yummy mummy armor, crisp jeans and a caramel cashmere, and a self-righteous expression.
I think I'm owed an explanation, don't you?
She glanced at my glass, eyebrows going up delicately.
And a drink, apparently.
Oh, no, no. Several drinks. I'm only getting started.
I assume you don't think you can sleep here if you get too drunk to drive.
Liv, I said, normally I would be more than happy to fight you up and down as many sidetracks as you choose, but tonight I think I should warn you I'm going to be sticking fairly closely to the point. How the sweet, shining fuck does Holly know Kevin?
Olivia started pulling back her hair, winding an elastic around it in crisp, deft flicks. She had obviously decided to play this cool, calm and collected.
I decided Jackie could introduce them.
Oh, believe me, I'll be having a chat with Jackie. I can see how you might just be naive enough to think this was a cute idea, but Jackie's got no excuse. Just Kevin or the whole bloody Adams family. Tell me it was just Kevin, Liv, please.
Olivia folded her arms and set her back flat against the kitchen wall. Her battle stance. I'd seen it so many times. Her grandparents, her uncles and aunt and her cousins. Shay, my mother, my father. I've never hit a woman. I didn't realize I was thinking about it till I felt my hand squeezing the edge of the puffy little bar stool hard. Jackie brought her over for tea on the odd evening after school. She met her family, Frank. It's not the end of the world. You don't meet my family. You open hostilities. You bring a flamethrower and a full set of body armor. How many odd evenings exactly has Holly spent meeting my family? A little shrug. I haven't kept a tally. 12? 15? Maybe 20? Over how long? That one got a guilty flicker of her lashes. About a year. I said, you've been getting my daughter to lie to me for a year. We told her, a year. Every weekend for a year I've been asking Holly what she did this week, and she's been giving me a big steaming heap of crap. We told her it would need to be a secret for a little while because you'd had a fight with your family, that's all. We were going to... You can call it keeping secret, you can call it lying, you can call it whatever the fuck you want. It's what my family does best. It's a natural-born, God-given talent. My plan was to keep Holly as far from it as possible and hope she would somehow beat the genetic odds and grow up to be an honest, healthy, non-twisted human being. Does that sound excessive to you, Olivia? Does that really sound like too much to ask? Frank, we're going to wake her up again if, instead of which, you dumped her right smack into the middle of it. And hey presto, surprise, surprise, the next thing you know, she's acting exactly like a fucking Mackie. She's taken to lying like a duck to water, and you're egging her on every step of the way. That's low, Liv. It really is. That's just about the lowest, dirtiest, shittiest thing I've ever heard. She had at least the grace to redden. We were going to tell you, Frank. We thought, once you saw how well it was working out... I laughed loud enough that Olivia flinched. Suffering Jesus Christ, Liv. You call this working out? Correct me if I'm missing something here, but as far as I can see, this whole wretched clusterfuck is very, very far from working out. For heaven's sake, Frank, it's not as if we knew that Kevin was going to... You knew I didn't want her anywhere near them. That should have been more than enough. What the hell else did you need to know? Olivia had her head down, and a stubborn set to her chin that was exactly like Holly's. I reached for the bottle again and caught the flash of her eyes, but she managed to say nothing. So I gave myself a great big refill, letting a good dollop slosh onto the lovely slate bar. Or is that why you did it? Because you knew I was dead set against it? Are you really that pissed off with me? Come on, Liv. I can take it. Let's get it all out in the open. Did you enjoy making a fool of me? Did you get a good laugh out of it? Did you really throw Holly into the middle of a shower of raving lunatics just to spite me? That one snapped her back straight. Don't you dare! I would never do anything to hurt Holly, and you know that. Never! Then why, Liv? Why? What on God's green earth could have made this seem like a good idea? Olivia took a quick breath through her nose and got her control back. She's had practice. She said coolly, they're her family too, Frank. She kept asking why she doesn't have two grannies like all her friends, whether you and Jackie have any more brothers and sisters. Why she couldn't go see them. Bullshit. I think she's asked me about my side once in her entire life. Yes, and your reaction showed her not to ask you again. She asked me instead, Frank. She asked Jackie. She wanted to know. Who gives a fuck what she wants? She's 9 years old. She also wants a lion cub and a diet made up of pizza and red M&Ms. Are you going to give her those too? Where her parents live. We're supposed to give her what's good for her, not whatever the hell she wants. Frank, shh. Why on earth should this have been bad for her? The only thing you've ever said about your family was that you didn't want to get back in touch. It's not as if you told me they were a shower of axe murderers. Jackie is lovely. She's never been anything but good to Holly, and she said the rest of them were perfectly nice people. And you took her word for it. Jackie lives in our happy place, Liv. She thinks Jeffrey Dahmer just needed to meet a nice girl. Since when does she make our child-rearing decisions? Liv started to say something, but I punched the words in harder till she gave up and shut her face. I feel sick here, Liv. Physically sick. This is the one place where I thought I could rely on you to back me up. You always thought my family wasn't good enough for you. What the hell makes them good enough for Holly? Olivia finally lost the rag. When did I ever say that, Frank? When? I stared. She was white with anger, hands pressed back against the door, breathing hard. If you think your family isn't good enough, if you're ashamed of them, then that's your problem, not mine. Don't you put it on me. I never once said that. I never thought it, never. She whipped around and grabbed the door open. It shut behind her with a click that, if it hadn't been for Holly, would have been a house-shaking slam. I sat there for a while, gawping at the door like a cretin, and feeling my brain cells whiz-bang like dodgem cars. Then I picked up the wine bottle, found another glass, and went after Olivia. She was in the conservatory, on the wicker sofa, with her legs curled up under her and her hands tucked deep into her sleeves. She didn't look up, but when I held out a glass to her, she disentangled a hand and took it. I poured us each a quantity of wine that could have drowned a small animal, and sat down next to her. It was still raining, patient, relentless drops pattering off the glass, and a cold draught was filtering in at some crack and spreading like smoke through the room. I caught myself making a mental note, even after all this time, to find the crack and caulk it over. Olivia sipped her wine, and I watched her reflection in the glass, shadowed eyes concentrating on something only she could see. After a while I asked, "Why didn't you ever say anything?" Her head didn't turn. "About what?" "All of it. But let's start with why you never told me my family didn't bother you." She shrugged. "You never seemed particularly anxious to discuss them. And I didn't think it needed saying. Why would I have a problem with people I've never met?" "Liv," I said, "do me a favor, don't play dumb. I'm too tired for that. We're in desperate housewives country here, in a conservatory, for fuck's sake. It's far from conservatories I was reared. My family is more along the Angela's Ashes lines. While your lot sit in the conservatory sipping Chianti, my lot are off in their tenement deciding which greyhound to blow the dole money on." That got the faintest twitch of her lips. "Frank, I knew you were working class the first time you opened your mouth. You never made a secret of that. I still went out with you." "Yeah, Lady Chatterley likes her bit of rough." The bitter edge took us both by surprise. Olivia turned to look at me. In the faint light trickling through from the kitchen, her face was long and sad and lovely, like something off a holy card. She said, "You never thought that." "No," I acknowledged after a moment. "Maybe not." "I wanted you. It was as simple as that." "It was simple as long as my family was out of the picture. You may have wanted me, but you never wanted my Uncle Bertie, who starts fart volume competitions. Or my great-aunt Concepta, who will explain to you how she was sitting behind a black on the bus and you should have seen the lips on him. Or my cousin Natalie, who put her 7-year-old on the sunbeds for First Communion. I can see how I, personally, wouldn't give the neighbours full-on heart attacks, maybe just a few mild palpitations, but we both know how the rest of the clan would go down with Daddy's golf cronies or Mummy's brunch club. Instant YouTube classic." Olivia said, "I'm not going to pretend that's not true, or that it never occurred to me." She was quiet for a while, turning her glass in her hands. "At first, yes, I thought the fact that you weren't in touch with them probably made things easier. Not that they weren't good enough, just easier. But once Holly came along, she changed the way I thought about everything, Frank, everything. I wanted her to have them. They're her family. That takes priority over their sunbed habits. I sat back on the sofa, got more wine into me, and tried to rearrange my head to make room for this information. It shouldn't have stunned the bejesus out of me, at least not to this extent. Olivia has always been a vast mystery to me, at every moment of our relationship, and especially in the moments when I thought I understood her best. When we met, she was a lawyer in the Office of Public Prosecutions. She wanted to prosecute a D-list smack dealer called Pippi, who had been picked up in a drug squad sweep, while I wanted to let him skip along his merry way, on the grounds that I had spent the last 6 weeks becoming Pippi's new BFF, and I didn't feel we'd exhausted his many interesting possibilities. I called around to Olivia's office to convince her in person. We argued for an hour. I sat on her desk and wasted her time and made her laugh. And then when it got late, I took her to dinner so we could keep arguing in comfort. Pippi got a few extra months of freedom, and I got a second date. She was something else. Sleek suits and subtle eyeshadow and impeccable manners. A mind like a razor, legs that just kept on keeping on. A backbone like steel and an aura of up-and-coming that you could almost taste. Marriage and babies were the last things on her mind, which, as far as I was concerned, was one of the fundamentals of any good relationship. I was just disentangling myself from another one, the seventh or maybe the eighth, I don't know, that had started cheerfully and then descended into stagnation and bitchery after about a year, when my lack of intentions became clear to both of us. If the pill were infallible, Liv and I would have gone the same way. Instead, we got a church wedding with all the trimmings, a reception in a country house hotel, a house in Dalkey, and Holly. I've never regretted it for a second, I said. Have you? It took her a moment, either to decide what I meant or to decide on the answer. Then she said, No. Neither have I. I put out a hand and covered hers, where it lay on her lap. The cashmere jumper was soft and worn, and I still knew the shape of her hand like I knew my own. After a while, I went back into the sitting room, got a throw off the sofa, and wrapped it around her shoulders. Olivia said, without looking at me, She wanted to know about them so badly. And they're her family, Frank. Family matters. She had a right. And I had a right to have a say about it. I'm still her father. I know. I should have told you. I respected what you wanted, but... She shook her head, against the back of the sofa. Her eyes were closed, and the semi-darkness rubbed shadows like great bruises underneath them. I knew if I brought it up, it would turn into an enormous argument, and I didn't have the energy. So, my family is terminally fucked up, Liv, I said. In far too many ways to go into. I don't want Holly to turn out like them. Holly's a happy, well-adjusted, healthy little girl. You know she is. It wasn't doing her any harm. She loved seeing them. This is... Nobody could have predicted this. I wondered wearily if that was even true. Personally, I would in fact have bet on at least one member of my family coming to a sticky and complicated end, although my money wouldn't have been on Kevin. I said, I keep thinking about all those times I asked what she'd been up to, and she went on about rollerblading with Sarah or making a volcano in science class. Chirpy as a little chickadee, not a bother on her. I never once suspected she was hiding anything. It kills me, Liv. It just kills me. Olivia's head turned towards me. It wasn't as bad as it sounds, Frank. Truly. She didn't think of it as lying to you. I told her that we might have to wait a while before we talked to you about it, because you'd had a big argument with your family. And she said, like that time I had a fight with Chloe, and all week I didn't even want to think about it or I cried. She understands more than you think. I don't want her protecting me. Ever. I want it to be the other way round. Something moved across Olivia's face, something a little wry and a little sad. she said. She's growing up, you know. In a few years she'll be a teenager. Things change.
I know, I said.
I know.
I thought about Holly sprawled in her bed upstairs, tear-stained and dreaming, and about the night we made her. The low, triumphant laugh in Liv's throat, her hair wrapped around my fingers, the taste of clean summer sweat on her shoulder. After a few minutes, Olivia said, "She'll need to talk about all this, in the morning. It would help her if we were both there. If you want to stay in the spare room..." "Thanks," I said. "That'd be good." She stood up, shook out the throw, and folded it over her arm. "The bed's made up." I tilted my glass. "I'll finish this first. Thanks for the drink." "Several drinks." Her voice had the sad ghost of a smile in it. "Those two." Behind the sofa, she stopped and her fingertips came down so tentatively I barely felt them, on my shoulder. She said, "I'm so sorry about Kevin." I said, and I heard the rough edge on my voice, "That was my baby brother. It doesn't matter how he went out that window. I should have caught him." Liv caught her breath like she was about to say something urgent, but after a moment she let it out in a sigh. She said very softly, maybe to herself, "Oh, Frank." Her fingers slipped off my shoulder, leaving small cold spots where they had been warm, and I heard the door click quietly behind her.
Chapter 14. When Olivia tapped lightly on the spare room door, I went from dead asleep to awake and depressed in under a second, even before any of the context came back to me. I'd spent way too many nights in that spare room, back when Liv and I were in the process of discovering that she no longer felt like being married to me. Even the smell of it, emptiness and the dainty spritz of fake jasmine, makes me feel sore and tired and about 100, like all my joints are worn down to the quick.
"Frank, it's 7:30, Liv said quietly through the door. "I thought you might want to talk to Holly before she goes to school."
I swung my legs out of the bed and rubbed my hands over my face. "Thanks, Liv. I'll be there in a minute." I wanted to ask if she had any suggestions, but before I could come up with the words, I heard her heels going down the stairs. She wouldn't have come into the spare room anyway, possibly in case I met her in my birthday suit and tried to lure her into a quickie. I've always loved strong women, which is lucky for me because once you're over about 25, there is no other kind. Women blow my mind. The stuff that routinely gets done to them would make most men curl up and die, but women turn to steel and keep on coming. Any man who claims he's not into strong women is fooling himself mindless. He's into strong women who know how to pout prettily and put on baby voices, and who will end up keeping his balls in their makeup bags. I want Holly to be one in millions. I want her to be everything that bores me stupid in a woman, soft as dandelions and fragile as spun glass. No one is turning my kid to steel. When she was born, I wanted to go out and kill someone for her, so she would know for sure all her life that I was ready to do it if it needed doing. Instead, I landed her with a family that had already, within a year of first laying eyes on her, taught her to lie and broken her heart. Holly was cross-legged on her bedroom floor in front of her dollhouse, with her back to me. "Hello, sweetheart," I said. "How you doing?" Shrug. She had her school uniform on. In the navy blue blazer, her shoulders looked so slight, I could have spanned them one-handed. "Can I come in for a bit?" Another shrug. I shut the door behind me and sat down on the floor next to her. Holly's dollhouse is a work of art, a perfect replica of a big Victorian house, complete with tiny, overcomplicated furniture, and tiny hunting scenes on the walls, and tiny servants being socially oppressed. It was a present from Olivia's parents. Holly had the dining room table out, and was polishing it furiously with a chewed-looking piece of kitchen roll. "Sweetheart," I said, It's okay that you're really upset about your Uncle Kevin.
So am I.
Her head bent down farther. She had done her own plaits. There were wisps of pale hair sprouting out of them at odd angles. Got any questions you want to ask me?
The polishing slowed down just a fraction.
Mum said he fell out a window.
Her nose was still stuffed up from all the crying.
That's right. I could see her picturing it. I wanted to cover her head with my hands and block the image out.
Did it hurt?
No, sweetie. It was very fast. He never even knew what was happening.
Why did he fall?
Olivia had probably told her it was an accident, but Holly has a two-home kid's passion for cross-checking. I have no scruples about lying to most people, but I have a whole separate conscience just for Holly.
Nobody's sure yet, love.
Her eyes finally swung up to meet mine, swollen and red-rimmed and intense as a punch.
But you're going to find out, right?
Yeah, I said. I am. She stared at me for another second. Then she nodded and ducked her head back down over the little table.
Is he in heaven?
Yes, I said. Even my special Holly conscience has its limits. Privately, I consider religion to be a load of bollocks, but when you have a sobbing five-year-old wanting to know what happened to her hamster, you develop an instant belief in anything that dissolves some of the heartbreak off her face. Definitely. He's up there right now, sitting on a beach a million miles long, drinking a Guinness the size of a bathtub, and flirting with a beautiful girl. She made a noise somewhere between a giggle, a sniffle, and a sob.
Daddy, no. I'm not messing.
Neither am I. And I bet he's waving down at you right now, telling you not to cry. Her voice wobbled harder.
I don't want him to be dead.
I know, baby. Me neither.
Connor Mulvey kept taking my scissors in school before, and Uncle Kevin told me, next time he did it, I should say to him, you only did that because you fancy me, and he'd go all red and stop annoying me. So I did, and it worked.
Good for your Uncle Kevin. Did you tell him?
Yeah. He laughed. Daddy, it's not fair.
She was on the verge of another huge damburst of tears. I said, it's massively unfair, love. I wish there was something I could say to make it better, but there isn't. Sometimes things are just really, really bad, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Mum says if I wait a while, I'll be able to think about him and it won't make me sad anymore.
Your mammy's usually right, I said. Let's hope she's right this time.
One time, Uncle Kevin said, I was his favourite niece because you used to be his favourite brother.
Oh, God. I reached to put an arm around her shoulders, but she shifted away and rubbed harder at the table, pushing the paper into tiny wooden curlicues with a fingernail.
Are you mad because I went to Nana and Grandad's?
No, chickadee. Not at you.
At Mum?
Just a little bit. We'll sort it out. Holly's eyes flicked sideways to me, just for an instant.
Are you going to yell at each other some more?
I grew up with a mother who has a black belt in guilt-tripping, but her finest work is nothing compared to what Holly can do without even trying. No yelling, I said. Mostly, I'm just upset that nobody told me what was going on. Silence. Remember how we talked about secrets?
Yeah.
Remember we said it's fine for you and your friends to have good secrets together, but if anything ever bothers you, that's the bad kind of secret. The kind you need to talk about to me or your mammy.
It wasn't bad. It's my grandparents.
I know, sweetie. What I'm trying to tell you is that there's another kind of secret as well. The kind where, even if there's nothing bad about it, someone else has a right to know it too. Her head was still down, and her chin was starting to get a stubborn look. Say your mammy and I decide to move to Australia. Should we tell you we're going, or should we just put you on a plane in the middle of the night? Shrug.
Tell me.
Because that would be your business. You'd have a right to know it.
Yeah.
When you started hanging out with my family, that was my business. Keeping it secret from me was the wrong thing to do. She didn't look convinced.
If I told you, you'd just have got all upset.
I'm a whole lot more upset this way than I would have been if someone had told me straight away.
Holly, sweetie, it's always better to tell me things early on. Always. Okay?
Even if they're things I don't like. Keeping them secret is only going to make it worse.
Holly slid the table carefully back into the dollhouse dining room, adjusted it with a fingertip.
I said, I tried to tell you the truth. Even when it hurts a little bit, you know that.
You need to do the same for me.
Is that fair?
Holly said to the dollhouse in a small, muffled voice,
Sorry, Daddy.
I said, I know you are, love. It's going to be okay. Just remember this. Next time you're thinking about keeping a secret from me, all right?
Nod.
There you go, I said. Now you can tell me how you got on with our family. Did your nana make you trifle for your tea?
A shaky little sigh of relief.
Yeah, and she says I've got lovely hair.
Holy shit, a compliment. I'd been all geared up to contradict criticisms of everything from Holly's accent, through her attitude, through the colour of her socks, but apparently my ma was getting soft in her old age.
Which you do.
What are your cousins like?
Holly shrugged and pulled a tiny grand piano out of the dollhouse living room.
Nice.
What kind of nice?
Darren and Louise don't talk to me that much because they're too big, but me and Donna do imitations of our teachers. One time, we laughed till Nana told us to shush or the police would come get us.
Which sounded a little more like the ma I knew and avoided.
How about your Aunt Carmel and Uncle Shay?
They're okay. Aunt Carmel's sort of boring, but when Uncle Shay's home, he helps me with my maths homework, because I told him Mrs. O'Donnell yells if you get stuff wrong.
And here I had been delighted that she was finally getting a handle on division.
That's nice of him, I said.
Why don't you go see them?
That's a long story, chicken. Too long for one morning.
Can I still go, even if you don't?
I said, we'll see. It all sounded perfectly idyllic, but Holly still wasn't looking at me. Something was bugging her, apart from the obvious. If she had seen my da in his preferred state of mind, there was going to be holy war and possibly a brand new custody hearing. I asked,
So what's in your mind?
Did one of them annoy you? Holly ran a fingernail up and down the piano keyboard. After a moment she said,
Nana and Grandad don't have a car.
This wasn't what I'd been expecting.
Nope.
Why?
They don't need one. Blank look. It struck me that Holly had never before in her life met anyone who didn't have a car, whether they needed one or not.
How do they get places?
They walk or they take buses. Most of their friends live just a minute or two away, and the shops are right around the corner. What would they do with a car? She thought about that for a minute.
Why don't they live in a whole house?
They've always lived where they do.
Your nana was born in that flat. I pity anyone who tries to get her to move.
How come they don't have a computer, or a dishwasher even?
Not everyone does.
Everyone has a computer.
I loathed admitting this even to myself, but somewhere at the back of my mind I was gradually getting an inkling of why Olivia and Jackie might have wanted Holly to see where I come from.
Nope, I said. Most people in the world don't have the money for that kind of stuff.
Even a lot of people right here in Dublin.
Daddy, are Nana and Grandad poor?
There was a faint pink stain on her cheeks, like she had said a bad word.
Well, I said, it depends who you ask. They'd say no. They're a lot better off than they were when I was little.
Then were they poor?
Yeah, sweetie. We weren't starving or anything, but we were pretty poor.
Like what?
Like we didn't go on holidays, and we had to save up if we wanted to go to the cinema.
Like I wore your Uncle Shay's old clothes and your Uncle Kevin wore mine instead of getting new ones.
Like your Nana and Grandad had to sleep in the sitting room because we didn't have enough bedrooms. She was wide-eyed, like it was a fairy tale.
Seriously?
Yep. Plenty of people lived like that. It wasn't the end of the world. Holly said,
but...
The pink stain had turned into a full-on blush. Chloe says poor people are scangers. This came as absolutely no surprise. Chloe is a simpering, bitchy, humorless little object with an anorexic, bitchy, humorless mother who talks to me loudly and slowly, using small words, because her family crawled out of the gutter a generation before mine, and because her fat, bitchy, humorless husband drives a Tahoe. I always thought we should ban the whole vile bunch of them from the house. Liv said Holly would outgrow Chloe in her own good time. This lovely moment, as far as I was concerned, settled the argument once and for all. Right, I said. What does Chloe mean by that, exactly? I kept my voice level, but Holly is good at me, and her eyes slid sideways quickly, checking my face. It's not a swear word. It's definitely not a nice word. What do you think it means? Wrigley shrugged.
You know.
If you're going to use a word, chick, you've got to have some idea what you're saying. Come on.
Like, stupid people. People who wear tracksuits, and they don't have jobs because they're lazy, and they can't even talk properly. Poor people.
I said, what about me? Do you think I'm stupid and lazy?
Not you.
Even though my whole family was poor as dirt? She was getting flustered.
That's different.
Exactly. You can be a rich scumbag just as easily as a poor scumbag. Or you can be a decent human being either way. Money's got nothing to do with it. It's nice to have, but it's not what makes you who you are. Chloe says her mum says it's super important to make sure people know straight away you've got plenty of money. Otherwise you don't get any respect in this world. Chloe and her family, I said, hitting the end of my patience, are vulgar enough to make your average blinged-up scanger blush.
What's vulgar?
Holly had stopped messing with the piano and was looking up at me in pure bewilderment, eyebrows pulled together, waiting for me to illuminate everything and make perfect sense of it all. For maybe the first time in her life, I had no idea what to say to her. I had no clue how to explain the difference between working poor and scumbag poor to a kid who thought everyone had a computer, or how to explain vulgar to a kid who was grown up on Britney Spears. Or how to explain to anyone at all how this situation had turned into such a terminal mess. I wanted to grab hold of Olivia and get her to show me the right way to do this, except that that wasn't Liv's job anymore. My relationship with Holly was all my own problem now. In the end, I took the miniature piano out of her hand, put it back in the dollhouse, and pulled her onto my lap. Holly said, leaning back to watch my face, Chloe's stupid, isn't she? My God, yes, I said. If there was a worldwide shortage of stupid, Chloe and her family between them could fix it in a heartbeat. She nodded and curled in against my chest, and I tucked her head under my chin. After a while she said,
someday, will you take me and show me where Uncle Kevin fell out of the window?
If you feel like you need to have a look, I said. Then sure. I'll show you.
Not today, though.
No, I said. Let's all just get through today in one piece. We sat there on the floor in silence, me rocking Holly back and forth and her sucking pensively on the end of a plait, until Olivia came in to tell us it was time for school. I picked up an extra-large coffee and an undefined organic-looking muffin in Dalkey. I get the sense Olivia thinks that feeding me might be taken as an invitation to move back in, and had breakfast sitting on a wall watching overweight suits in tanks get outraged when the traffic waves didn't part specially for them. Then I dialed my voicemail.
Yeah, Frank. Hi, it's Kev. Listen, I know you said this wasn't a good time, but... I mean, not now, like, but whenever you're free, can you give us a ring? Like, tonight or whatever, even if it's late. That's okay. Thanks. Bye.
The second time, he hung up, no message. Same thing with the third time,
while Holly and Jackie and I were stuffing our faces with pizza. The fourth call had come in just before 7, presumably when Kevin was on his way into Ma and Da's.
Frank, it's me again. Listen, I kind of need to talk to you. I know you probably don't want to think about any of this crap, right? But honest to God, I'm not trying to mess with your head. I just... Could you ring me? Okay, I guess... Bye.
Something had changed between Saturday night when I sent him back to the pub and Sunday afternoon when the phone campaign kicked in. There could have been something that had happened along the way, maybe in the pub. For several of the Blackbirds' regulars, the fact that they haven't killed anyone yet is down to pure chance. But I doubted it. Kevin had started getting edgy well before we ever hit that pub. Everything I knew about him, and I still thought that was worth something, told me he was a laid-back guy. But he'd been acting squirrely since right around the time we headed into number 16. I'd put it down to the fact that your average civilian does tend to get a little thrown by the idea of dead people. My mind had been on other things. It had been a lot more than that. Whatever had been bothering Kevin, it wasn't something that had just happened this weekend. It had already been stashed at the bottom of his mind, maybe for 22 years, until something on Saturday jarred it loose. Slowly, over the rest of the day, our Kev was never the fastest little sprinter on the track, it had bobbed to the surface and started nudging at him, harder and harder. He had spent 24 hours trying to ignore it or figure it out or deal with the implications all by himself, and then he had gone to Big Brother Francis for help. When I told him to get lost, he had turned to the worst possible person. He had a nice voice on the phone. Even confused and worried, he was easy to listen to. He sounded like a good guy, someone you would want to get to know. As far as next moves went, my options were limited. The thought of chummy chats with the neighbours had lost a lot of its sparkle now that I knew half of them thought I was a cold-blooded ninja brother killer. And anyway, I needed to stay well out of Scorcher's line of vision, if only for the sake of George's bowels. On the other hand, the idea of hanging around kicking my heels and watching my mobile for Stephen's number to come up like a teenage girl after a snog didn't particularly appeal to me either. When I do nothing, I like it to have a purpose. Something was pinching at the back of my neck, like someone tugging out little hairs one by one. I pay attention to that tug. There have been plenty of times when ignoring it would have got me killed. There was something I was missing. Something I had seen or heard and let slip by. Undercovers don't get to video all the best parts the way murder boys do, so we have very, very good memories. I got more comfortable on the wall, lit a smoke, and went back over every bit of information I'd picked up in the last few days. One thing stuck out. I still wasn't clear on just how that suitcase had got up that chimney. According to Nora, it had been put up there sometime between Thursday afternoon, when she bummed Rosie's Walkman, and Saturday night. But according to Mandy, Rosie hadn't had her keys for those 2 days, which more or less ruled out the possibility of sneaking the case out at night. There had been an awful lot of inconvenient garden walls between her and number 16, and Matt Daly had been keeping an eagle eye on her, which would have made it pretty tough to smuggle out something sizable during the day. Also, according to Nora, on Thursdays and Fridays, Rosie walked to and from work with Imelda Tierney. Friday evening, Nora had been out of the pictures with her little mates. Rosie and Imelda could have had the bedroom to themselves to pack and plan. Nobody had been paying attention to Imelda's comings and goings. She could have waltzed out of that flat caring just about anything she liked. These days, Imelda lived on Hallows Lane, just far enough from Faithful Place to be outside Scorch's perimeter. And going by the look in Mandy's eye, there was a decent chance that Imelda was at home in the middle of the workday, and that her relationship with the neighbourhood was mixed enough to give her a soft spot for a prodigal son who was walking the fine line between in and out. I tossed back the last of my cold coffee and headed for my car. My mate in the electric company pulled up an electricity bill for an Imelda Tierney at 10 Hallows Lane, flat 3. The house was a kip, slates missing from the roof, paint flaking off the door, net curtains sagging behind grimy windows. You could tell the neighbors were praying the landlord would sell up to a nice, respectable yuppie or two, or at least burn the place down for the insurance money. I had been right. Imelda was home. "Francis," she said, somewhere between shocked and delighted and horrified when she opened the flat door.
"Jesus."
Not one of those 22 years had been nice to Imelda. She had never been a stunner, but she had had height and good legs and a good walk, and those three can take you a long way. These days, she was what the boys on the squad call a bobfock, B-O-B-F-O-C. Body off Baywatch, face off Crime Watch. She had kept her figure, but there were pouches under her eyes, and her face was covered in wrinkles like knife scars. She was wearing a white tracksuit with a coffee stain down the front, and her bleach job had about 3 inches of exhausted roots. The sight of me made her whip up a hand to fluff it into shape, like that was all it would take to snap us straight back to those glossy teenagers fizzing with Saturday night. That little gesture was the part that went straight to my heart. I said, "How are you, Imelda?" and gave her my best grin to remind her that we'd been good pals way back when. I always liked Imelda. She was a smart kid, restless, with a moody streak and sharp edges that she had earned the hard way. Instead of one permanent father, she had way too many temporary ones, several of them married to people who weren't her mother, and in those days that mattered. Imelda took a lot of flack about her ma when we were all kids. Most of us lived in glass houses one way or another, but an unemployed alco father was nowhere near as bad as a ma who had sex. Imelda said, "I heard about Kevin. God rest him. I'm awful sorry for your trouble." "God rest," I agreed. While I'm back in the area, I thought I'd call in on a few old mates. I stayed there, in the doorway, waiting. Imelda shot a fast glance over her shoulder, but I wasn't moving and she didn't have a choice. After a second she said, "The place is in bits." "You think I care about that? You should see my gaff. It's just good to see you again." By the time I'd finished talking, I was past her and through the door. The place wasn't quite a shithole, but I saw her point. One look at Mandy at home had said this woman was contented. Not permanently ecstatic, maybe, but her life had turned out to be something she liked. Imelda, not so much. The sitting room felt even smaller than it was, because there was stuff everywhere. Used mugs and Chinese takeaway cartons on the floor around the sofa, women's clothes various sizes, drying on the radiators, dusty piles of bootleg DVD cases toppling over in corners. The heat was up too high, and the windows hadn't been opened in a long time. The place had a thick smell of ashtrays, food, and women. Everything except the telly on steroids needed replacing. "This is a great little place," I said. Imelda said shortly, "It's shite. I grew up in a lot worse." She shrugged. "So? Doesn't stop this being shite? Will you have tea?" "Love some. Have you been?" She headed into the kitchen. "You can see for yourself. Sit down there." I found a non-crusty patch of sofa and settled in. "I hear you've got daughters these days, yeah?" Through the half-open kitchen door I saw Imelda pause with her hand on the kettle. She said, "And I heard you're a guard now." I was getting used to the illogical shot of anger when someone informed me I had turned into the man's bum boy. It was even starting to come in useful. "Imelda," I said, outraged and wounded to the bone after a second of shocked silence. "Are you serious? You think I'm here to give you a hassle about your kids?" Shrug. "How do I know? They've done nothing anyway. I don't even know their names. I was only asking for fuck's sake. I don't give a rat's arse if you've raised the bleeding Sopranos. I only want to say how you for old time's sake. If you're just going to throw freakers about what I do for a living, then tell me and I'll get out of your hair, believe me." After a moment I saw the corner of Imelda's mouth twitch reluctantly, and she flicked on the kettle. "Same old Francis,
the bleeding temper on you.
Yeah, I've three. Isabel, Shania, and Genevieve. Holy fucking terrors, the three of them. Teenagers. What about you?
No mention of a father or fathers. One, I said. She's nine.
It's all ahead of you. God help you. They say boys wreck your house and girls wreck your head, and it's the truth.
She tossed tea bags into mugs. Just watching the way she moved made me feel old.
Are you still doing the sewing?
A sniff that could have been a laugh.
God, that's gone a while back. I quit the factory 20 years back. I do bits and bobs now. Cleaning, mostly.
Her eyes flicked sideways to me, belligerent, checking whether I wanted to make something of that.
The Eastern Europeans will do it cheaper, but there's still a few places want someone that speaks English. I do all right, so I do.
The kettle boiled. I said, you heard about Rosie, yeah?
I did, yeah.
That's only shocking.
All this time,
Imelda poured the tea and gave her head a quick shake, like she was trying to get something out of it.
All this time I thought she was off in England. When I heard, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. I swear, the rest of the day I was walking around like a zombie.
I said, same here. It hasn't been a great week all round. Imelda brought out a carton of milk and a packet of sugar, made room for them on the coffee table. She said,
Kevin was always a lovely young fella. I'm sorry to hear about him. Really sorry now. I would have called round to yours the night it happened, only...
She shrugged, let it trail off. Chloe and Chloe's mummy would never in a million years have understood the subtle, definite class gap that made Imelda think, probably correctly, that she might not be welcome in my mother's house. I said,
I was hoping I'd see you there, but hey, this way we get to have a proper chat, am I right?
Another half grin, a little less reluctant this time.
And same old Francis again. You always were a smooth talker.
I've got better hair now, though.
Jesus, yeah. The spikes. Do you remember?
It could have been worse. I could have had a mullet like Zippy.
Yuck, stop. The head on him.
She headed back to the kitchen for the mugs. Even if I'd had all the time in the world, sitting around shooting the breeze wouldn't do me any good here. Imelda was a lot harder than Mandy. She already knew I had an agenda, even if she couldn't put her finger on it. When she came out, I said,
Can I ask you something?
I'm being a nosy bollocks, but I swear I've got a good reason for asking.
Imelda put a stained mug in my hand and sat down in an armchair, but she didn't lean back and her eyes were still wary.
Go on.
When you put Rosie's suitcase in number 16 for her, where'd you leave it exactly?
The instant, blank look, half mule and half moron, brought it home to me all over again just where I stood now. Nothing in the world quite cancelled out the fact that Imelda was, against every instinct in her body, talking to a cop. She said, inevitably,
What suitcase?
Ah, come on, Imelda, I said, easy and grinning. One wrong note and this whole trip would sink into a waste of time.
Me and Rosie, we'd been planning this for months. You think she didn't tell me how she was getting stuff done?
Slowly, some of the blank look dissolved off Imelda's face, not all of it, but enough.
She said, I'm not getting in any hassle about this. If anyone else asks me, I never saw no suitcase.
Not a problem, babe. I'm not about to drop you in the shite. You are doing us a favour, and I appreciate that. All I want to know is whether anyone messed with the case after you dropped it off. Do you remember where you left it and when? She watched me sharply, under her thin lashes, figuring out what this meant. Finally, she reached into a pocket for her smoke packet and said,
Rosie said it to me 3 days before yous were heading off. She never said nothing before that. Me and Mandy guessed something was up like, but we didn't know anything for definite. Have you seen Mandy, yeah?
Yep, she's looking in great form.
Snobby cow, Imelda said, through the click of the lighter.
Smoke?
Yeah, thanks.
I thought you and Mandy were mates.
A hard snort of laughter as she held the lighter for me.
Not any more. She's too good for the likes of me. I don't know were we ever really mates to begin with.
We just both used to hang out with Rosie. And after she left...
I said, you were always the one she was closest to. Imelda gave me a look that said better men had tried to soft soap her and failed.
If we'd been that close, she'd have told me from the start what yous had planned, wouldn't she? She only said anything because her da had his eye on her, so she couldn't get her gear out on her own. The two of us used to walk back and forth from the factory together some days, talk about whatever girls talk about, I don't remember. This one day she said to me she needed a favour.
I said, how'd you get the suitcase out of their flat?
Easy. After work the next day, the Friday, I went over to the Dailies. We told her ma and da we were going to Rosie's room to listen to her new Eurythmics album. All they said was for us to keep it down. We had it just loud enough that they wouldn't hear Rosie packing.
There was a tiny slip of a smile nudging at one corner of Imelda's mouth. Just for a second, leaning forward with her elbows on her knees, smiling to herself through cigarette smoke, she looked like the quick-moving, smart-mouthed girl I used to know.
Should have seen her, Francis. She was dancing around that room, she was singing in her hairbrush. She had these new knickers she was after buying so you wouldn't see her manky old ones, and she was waving them around her head. She had me dancing along and all. We must have looked like a right pair of idiots, laughing our arses off and trying to do it quiet enough that our ma and da wouldn't come in and see what we were at. I think it was being able to say it to someone, after keeping it under wraps all that time. She was over the moon with herself.
I slammed the door on that picture fast. It would keep for later.
Good,
I said. That's good to hear.
So, when she finished packing?
The grin spread to both sides of Imelda's mouth.
I just picked up the case and walked out. Swear to God. I had my jacket over it, but that wouldn't have fooled anyone for a second. Not if they'd been looking proper. I went out of the bedroom and Rosie said goodbye to me, nice and loud. And I shouted goodbye to Mr. Daly and Mrs. Daly. They were in the sitting room watching the telly. He looked around when I went past, but he was only checking to make sure Rosie wasn't going with me. He never even noticed the case. I just let myself out.
Fair play to the pair of yous, I said, grinning back.
And you took it straight across to number 16? Yeah. It was winter. Dark already, and cold. So everyone was indoors. No one saw me.
Her eyes were hooded against the smoke, remembering.
I'm telling you, Francis, I was afraid for my life going into that house. I'd never been in there in the dark before, not my own anyway. The worst was the stairs. The rooms had a bit of light coming in through the windows, but the stairs were black. I had to feel my way up, cobwebs all over me, and half the steps rocking like the whole place was about to fall down around me ears, and little noises everywhere. I swear to God I thought there was someone else in there, or a ghost maybe watching me. I was all ready to scream if someone grabbed me. I legged it out of there like me arse was on fire.
Do you remember where you put the suitcase?
I do, yeah. Me and Rosie had that all arranged. It went up behind the fireplace in the top front room. The big room, you know the one. If it hadn't fit there, I was going to put it under that heap of boards and metal and shite in the corner of the basement. But I didn't fancy going down there unless I had to. It fit grand in the end.
Thanks, Imelda, I said, for giving us a hand. I should have thanked you a long time ago, but better late than never.
Imelda said, now can I ask you something, can I? Or does it only go the one way?
Like the Gestapo, we ask the questions.
Nah, babe, fair's fair, goes both ways. Ask away. People are saying Rosie and Kevin were killed, like, murdered, the pair of them. Are they only saying that for the scandal, or is it true?
I said, Rosie was killed, yeah. No one's sure about Kevin yet.
How was she killed?
I shook my head. No one's telling me.
Yeah, right.
Imelda, I said, you can keep thinking of me as a cop if you want, but I guarantee you, right now there's not one person on the force thinking that way. I'm not working this case. I'm not even supposed to be near this case. I've put my job on the line just by coming here. I'm not a cop this week. I'm the annoying fucker who won't go away because he loved Rosie Daly. Imelda bit down on the side of her lip, hard. She said, I loved her too, so I did.
I love that girl to bits.